From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Delayed a day by Hurricane Isaac, the convention is now underway, and delegates this afternoon formally nominated Mitt Romney as their presidential candidate. It was a slog for him early on this campaign season. During the primaries, it seemed as if he was chosen by a process of elimination as a series of competitors rose then fell. But this is the week the party can unify and tell Americans directly what it sees is at stake. This fall, we'll have live coverage the rest of the evening. Among others, we'll hear from the candidate's wife, Ann Romney, and the keynote speaker, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. At the convention hall in Tampa, we're now joined by NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving and E.J. Dion of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution. Welcome to you guys.
Good to be with you, Jennifer.
Also at NPR election headquarters in Tampa, NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson. Hi, Mara. Sorry, she's coming to us later this hour. Here in Washington with me is Matt Continenti. He's editor-in-chief of the Washington Free Beacon. Welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Ron Elving, you're in Tampa. The party formally adopted its platform late this afternoon. What stands out for you?
The platform was not so controversial. The credentials and the rules reports, however, did produce a little mini Isaac here on the floor of the convention, as the Ron Paul delegates from a number of different states were very unhappy with the seating of certain Maine delegates and very unhappy with the rules change that will be part of the 2016 convention that will make it harder for insurgent candidates like Ron Paul to make their presence felt.
Although Ron Paul did make his presence felt today, did he not? Were there some cheers from supporters there, I understand?
Yes, he was physically on the floor. He attracted quite a bit of attention. There were a lot of people crowded around him. But his name was not placed formally in nomination, and all the votes that were cast for him by the delegates during the roll call vote were not announced by the officials who were running the actual proceeding of the vote. So the chair did not announce those votes. They did not get any kind of official recognition whatsoever. And that was very disconcerting for the Ron Paul delegates, who kept shouting his votes out from the crowd, somewhat disruptive, but really did not keep the general spirit of the convention from being mostly about Mitt Romney and mostly about unity.
Huh. Matt Continenti, the platform is interesting. I read that there's a line in there. It pledges that the GOP will, quote, begin anew with profound changes in the way government operates, the way it budgets, taxes, and regulates. What does that say?
Well, they better begin anew, because the Republican brand had been through a shellacking, as our president might say, over the last several years. It was only with the type of governor that we'll see tonight, Chris Christie, and his companions in places like Wisconsin with Scott Walker, Bob McDonnell in Virginia, this new generation of reform GOP governors now, who are talking about kind of down-home Republican issues like fiscal responsibility, and a way to pivot away from the Bush legacy of war and debt. And so this convention is a way to kind of restart, re-energize the party around Mitt Romney in 2012.
E.J. Dion, how important is this week?
Well, I think this week is important because Mitt Romney has not really introduced himself very well to Americans. He spent much of the primary campaign going after his opponents. He spent a lot of the summer either going after President Obama or occasionally, more than occasionally, on the defense, either on his experience at Bain Capital later, right before the convention, Todd Akin's troubles over that outrageous statement took over the news. So this is a chance for the first time for him to tell Americans who he is. The problem is conventions don't get the audiences they used to. Conventions tend to be watched much more by partisans, by people who are partisans of the candidate, not by bipartisans. And this convention is going to be particularly vexed because I've got a TV screen nearby, and right now the news is on the convention, but some of the cable channels are flipping back and forth between the hurricane and the convention.
Yeah, there was another big story this week that was not expected.
Could I just say one thing? This is a very, very, very conservative platform. And historically, I think of George Romney, Mitt Romney's dad, who is a very progressive Republican. He walked out during Barry Goldwater's speech in 1964. He did not like the turn of the Republican Party to the right. Mitt Romney is being nominated in a broad sense on Barry Goldwater's principles. If anything, the party may even be more conservative than it was in the days of George Romney and Barry Goldwater. And that's a really historic change in the Republican Party.
Ron Elving, EJ just said that conventions don't get the audiences they used to. They traditionally served as sort of the opening of the general campaign, but everything is so 24/7 now, and we've had a summer with chock-a-block ads. How much difference do you think that these conventions can make and might make?
They still make a difference, I believe, for the people who do not watch them, because the people who do not tune in for several hours a night will still be bombarded with YouTube videos and ads that are made from the conventions and news reports about the conventions. And even though we don't have the three networks dominating everyone's television and giving them 1 hour after another of the conventions the way we used to have, and even though people can switch all over the place and watch all kinds of other programming, they will still get an impression of what went on at each one of these conventions. And much of the information that they get about Mitt Romney in the next few days that will stick into the next few weeks and months will come from this convention.
Matt Cottineni, is the convention addressing its partisans, or will there be a lot of message here as well for Democrats or independents?
Oh, I think this whole convention is going to be about independents, and it's the independent voters who swung for Obama in 2008 and then swung back toward the Republican Party in 2010, who were the crucial demographic in this election.
And so, although we keep hearing from some analysts that it looks like the campaign is targeting the base, that there's so few moderates thought to be really, or independents thought to be swayable out there, that maybe they're going to go for the base instead. No,
right. I mean, that could be true, but you know, if you don't win the independents, you don't win the election. And a lot of these independents, by the way, are what we call disaffected voters. They're voters who were part of one of the two parties, many of them part of the Republican Party, but who became detached, actually, in the last decade because of some of the Bush policies that I mentioned. And so now the big problem for the Republican Party has been getting those voters reattached. And the way to do it, the way that the Gingrich Republicans were able to do it, the way that the Tea Party Republicans were able to do it just in the last 2 years, is talking about fiscal issues and the debt.
And that's one of the reasons I think that dissing the Ron Paul people today was not a great idea on the part of the leadership of this convention or the Romney campaign, because Ron Paul brought in a lot, most of the young people who voted in the Republican primaries were there to vote for Ron Paul. At least some of those voters might be available to the Republican Party. And I can tell you, they are very angry about this. I was walking into the convention, and a young man stopped a friend of me on the street saying, "Are you a delegate?" We said, "No, were you on the Rules Committee?" And he was ready to give us a piece of his mind about how the Ron Paul people were treated. They're not a huge constituency in the country, but there are a lot of libertarians out there, and I think the Republicans made a mistake today.
All right. We've just had the Oak Ridge Boys give a rendition of Amazing Grace there, and we're about to hear from Kathy McMorris Rogers. She's a representative from Washington State, the only woman among the top GOP leaders in the House. Let's listen to Kathy McMorris Rogers. Oh, here she comes, walking out onto the stage.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Kathy McMorris Rogers, and I'm proud to represent Eastern Washington in Congress. Tonight, we're going to do things a little differently. I have the pleasure of serving as your host for the evening, guiding you through the next few hours. And I'm delighted to report we have a wonderful lineup for you. Each speaker will be joining together to send a message to President Obama. And that message is three simple words. We built it. Before I ran for Congress, I worked in my family's business, the Peachcrest Fruit Basket, for 13 years. I worked hard every day, And I can assure you that my family built that business from the ground up. Today, that hands-on experience guides my decision-making in Congress. Unlike President Obama, I know that small businesses are the true engine of our economy, not the government. And what businesses need to grow and create jobs is less taxes and less regulation, not more. Tonight, you'll hear a variety of stories from people who work hard every day to build our economy. You'll hear from Jack Gilchrist, the owner of a family-owned metal fabricating business in New Hampshire. A number of our leading nation's governors are with us tonight, the chief executives from states like Ohio, Wisconsin, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Nevada, and Virginia. Places where they have created an environment that unleashes American ingenuity instead of stifling it. They will tell us how their job creators in their communities aren't found in the state house. They're found on Main Street. And one of the speakers I'm most looking forward to hearing from tonight is someone who I think we can all agree will make a fabulous First Lady, Ann Romney. To close out the evening, we will hear from a dynamic and engaging leader who's really shaking up the way they do business in New Jersey, Governor Chris Christie. So, let's get started. Our next speaker is from the Granite State and was elected to the United States Senate in 2010. Ladies and gentlemen, Senator Kelly Ayotte.
And Kelly Ayotte is a senator from New Hampshire. She endorsed Romney early on, and she's a favorite of the Tea Party.
Live free or die. That's the motto of the great state of New Hampshire. But I believe tonight we all share that view, as have generations of Americans before us. Like most Americans, our life changed after 9/11. My husband, Joe, who was on track to be a commercial pilot, instead served our great country flying combat missions in Iraq. And when Joe returned home from the war, he found himself in the same position as so many Americans. He needed a job. So he started a family business, a landscaping and snow plowing company. And when I say he, I mean we, because I spent many a sleepless night shoveling snow, and I'm proud of the fact that in addition to being a United States Senator, I'm also pretty good with a snowplow. We are no different from most families who take risks starting their own business. We borrowed money to pursue our dreams, and believe me, there was no guarantee of success. We were certainly not too big to fail. We had to make it work. Yet through all the hard work and sacrifice, we pulled together as a family. And as the business grew, so did our extended family. And I speak to you tonight with great concern for our employees, their families, my family, and your family. My concern is that President Obama is making it very difficult for small businesses to get started, to create jobs, and to survive. You know what I hear all the time from small business owners that I speak with? They want to focus on their business. The Obama administration wants to bury them with rules, regulations, and red tape. From the National Labor Relations Board to the Department of Labor to the EPA, under this administration, the regulations are up and the job creation is down. President Obama's view is clear. He actually believes that as a small business grows, the federal government should take a larger and larger share of its earnings. That's punishment for expanding and creating more jobs. I call it a success tax. And you know, the very best example is Obamacare. And let me tell you what I hear in the real world about Obamacare. Just a couple of months ago, a successful restaurant owner in Concord, New Hampshire, told me about his dilemma. He wanted to open up a second restaurant and hire more employees. But you know what? He realized that if he did, he would trigger penalties under Obamacare, and he couldn't afford it. So he never opened up that restaurant. Is that what we want for small businesses in America? No. To be afraid to grow because of the government? To face penalties when you create more jobs? To be told you're earning too much? Isn't it time that we had a leader who believes that creating jobs ought to be celebrated, not penalized? That is why Mitt Romney is running for president.
And we've been listening to New Hampshire Senator Kelly Ayotte. We will be back in a moment with more live coverage. Ann Romney and Chris Christie, keynote speakers, coming up this evening. There's a lot more discussion about the convention going on at our website, where you can join in a live chat. That's at npr.org. You are listening to special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News. And we will be back in a few moments with Ron Elving, Mara Liasson, and we also have Matt Continenti and EJ Dion here offering analysis of the day's events and what this week means. We'll also be hearing from a lot of up-and-coming bright stars in the Republican Party, and all leading up to a keynote address by the New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who's always lively and engaging. Whether or not you agree with his politics, he will be fascinating to listen to. This is special coverage of the...
It's the right question. And it's the question that this administration...
Special coverage of the Republican National Convention from NPR News.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden. We're joined by NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving down at the Tampa Convention Center, and he's with E.J. Dion of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution. Hello there. And Matthew Continenti here of the It's the Washington Free Beacon. He's here in Studio 3A with me in Washington, D.C. Matt, what have you made of the speeches we've been hearing so far?
Well, I guess the message that's coming across is something having to do with people building small businesses.
I think a lot of small businesses.
I'm getting that message. You know, putting Obama's remarks in context, we spent a lot of time doing that about Obama's remarks on August 13th to that audience in Roanoke about where success comes from, what impact and effect individual initiative has in a business's success. Those words that Obama said at that moment were kind of like a siren for Republicans, and I think Republican-leaning independents. And so you see the Romney campaign really seize on them, trying to make those words represent a break between Obama and small business people who, you know, who are in the millions across America. There's a danger, though, that the Republicans may take this a little bit too far. You know, eventually, if you drum it in enough, the people are just going to get tired of the message. But that's certainly not how they're responding tonight.
E.J. Dion, small businesses.
I did get that message somehow out of this convention. I mean, it has already, I think, gotten a little monotonous. Some of the small business people are compelling folks. There was a woman up earlier called Cher Valenzuela who did a nice job of telling the story of her family's business. By the way, earlier than that, there was an actress called Janine Turner, who I think showed how far Republicans are willing to go. She attacked a gimme-gimme mentality and then said, oh, President Obama is stifling the American dream primarily because it isn't his dream. Well, why isn't it his dream? This is the kind of language where I think Republicans are in great danger of going over the top. And a lot of this small business talk, yes, there are small business folks who are independents, and by the way, many who are Democrats, but I'm not sure this isn't more for the base than for those independents. I didn't hear too much in Kelly Ayotte's speech, the senator from New Hampshire, that wasn't really basically Republican boilerplate. And she is a successful politician in New Hampshire, but I don't know how much reach that particular speech had. So I think there's a danger that they're still playing to the base.
Ron Elving?
I don't know that they have any problem with playing to the base in their own minds, although that there is the question of how they define the base and whether or not they're defining the base properly to bring out those disaffected elements of the base in November. We talked earlier about the rebuff to Ron Paul's supporters earlier today, and that is a part of the base that they don't seem to be worried about. They assume those people are so angry about the Obama presidency, about the medical program that we call Obamacare or the Affordable Health Care Act. These things they believe will bring out their vote in November, so they're not really worried about those folks. They seem to be more focused on an entrepreneurial class, a group of people who have been successful. There was a lot of talk from party chairman Reince Priebus a little bit earlier, just before we began the broadcast, about the proper attitude towards the folks who had the big house.
Okay, Ron, I'm going to interject, and we're going to hear now from John Kasich. He's the governor of Ohio.
I don't know about you, but I've got a feeling. You know, I got a feeling, and it's just because I don't like the black-eyed peas. I got a feeling that we're about to elect a new president of the United States of America. And let me tell you why it matters, because it really matters. We need a president who will restore the strength and the power of the American people so we, the people, can rebuild our economy and so we, the people, can rebuild the United States of America. Plain and simple. You know, we've made real progress in Ohio in restoring confidence, because that's what so much of life is about. And we are setting people free in order to build success. But we need a new partner in Washington. This relationship is just not working. It is holding us back. I'm going to tell you our story. I'm going to tell you the story of Ohio and the story of lessons learned. I took office in 2011. And when I came into office, we were 48th in the nation in job creation. 48th. We had an $8 billion budget deficit, the largest in the history of the great state of Ohio, and we had 89 cents in our rainy day fund. Most toddlers have more than 89 cents in their little piggy banks, let alone what was in our treasury. Our credit rating was headed down the drain. And we had suffered a loss of 400,000 jobs. And ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the greatest moral issue in America today is job creation. We had lost 400,000 jobs. Our people were hurting and our families were hurting as a result of the recession. In Ohio, we were following a policy of tax, spend, and duck. And that's too much of what politicians do. They want to avoid the tough issues. But when we came into power with my colleagues in the legislature, we took our problems head on. We balanced our budget. That $8 billion deficit was eliminated without a tax increase in the state of Ohio. And we could not raise taxes because we were not competitive. So you know how we did it? We did it the way that a family does it. We sat down and set priorities. We eliminated those programs that we no longer needed. And you know, when government people spend our money, they're very wasteful about it. So we went through it and eliminated those things we didn't need, but we prioritized those things that we really did need. And I'll give you an example. We allowed mom and dad to stay in their own homes, if able, instead of going into a nursing home where the costs were five times as high. And when they're in their own home, they're healthier and happier and, frankly, more independent. And that saved us a lot of money because we made government work better. And that made a heck of a lot of sense for us. We also cut taxes because Ohio needed to be competitive. We were $8 billion in the hole. We balanced the budget, but we cut our taxes. And we cut the income tax. And the reason we cut it is so that Ohio could be competitive. And at the same time, we killed the death tax. We killed the death tax. And we killed that death tax because no person should have to visit the undertaker and the tax man on the same day. And small businesses and farmers should be able to pass on their hard work to the next generation. And we need to do it in Washington as well.
This is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News.
And we restored common sense in our regulations. And you know what? We still protect the environment. We protect our families. But we don't overregulate and kill the job creators in our state. In fact, we want to honor the job creators in our state and work with them because they help our families. Now, I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, just like what Mitt Romney's going to face, the actions that we took were not always easy. And the actions that we took were not always popular. But you know what? When you get yourself in public service, you must lead and you must do what is necessary. And I want to tell you the good news of where we are today. I told you a minute ago that when we came into office, we were 48th in job creation. You know where we are today? We're fourth in America in job creation and number one in the Midwest.
Ohio Governor John Kasich.
We went from 89 cents in our rainy day fund to $500 million in surplus, $500 million in surplus from being in the hole. And you know, I watched in horror as we saw the Italians and the French and the Spanish and the Greeks have their credit downgrade. And I remember the night I watched America's credit go downgraded. But in Ohio, instead of our credit going down the drain, our credit outlook has been improved because it's been recognized that we are managing our finances and creating jobs. But ladies and gentlemen, when over those last 4 years we had lost 400,000 jobs, in Ohio today we have grown new jobs by 122,000. 122,000 families better off. But you know what? The wind is in our face. The president has given us headwinds. President Obama has doubled the national debt. You know, I was chairman of the budget committee when we balanced the budget in 97, and I look with horror up at that clock that shows $15 trillion in the national debt. That's the sword of Damocles hanging over our children's head. And the president is doing nothing about it. In fact, each year he's increasing that by $1 trillion. $1 trillion. And let me also tell you that the president says his answer to these problems lie in this: more taxes. Let's take more money out of the pockets of the American people and send it to, of all places, Washington, D.C. Can you even believe it? We not only need to balance budgets, we need to cut taxes, not raise them, to get on the right track. And his regulations have had a smothering effect on businesses, and it has paralyzed the job creators. Folks, this is the wrong philosophy. These are the wrong policies. And we need a new leader. And that is exactly why I am for Mitt Romney for President of the United States. You know, I want to tell you about Mitt. He's a business leader. If there is anything we need in government today, it's people who understand how to create jobs, plain and simple. And the people that criticize folks in business just simply don't get it. They've put us in this hole. And Mitt Romney has a history of being a great job creator. Secondly, he was a great governor. He went from billions of dollars in the hole when he became governor to billions of dollars in surplus when he left. And he went from the loss of tens of thousands of jobs when he became governor to the creation of 40,000 new jobs when he left office. And he did it in Massachusetts, of all places, okay? And remember this: beyond his work in business and beyond his work in government, he's a natural leader. He took those Salt Lake City Winter Olympics and took them when they were in peril and headed down the drain. He fixed the Olympics and made every American proud of what he did in Salt Lake City and built a shinier and brighter America as a result. Folks, I want to tell you this. Joe Biden disputes a lot of those facts, but Joe Biden told me that he was a good golfer. And I've played golf with Joe Biden. I can tell you that's not true, as well as all the other things that he says. Folks, for the good of our kids, I know we're at a Republican convention, but this is not about Republican and Democrat. This is about somebody that's going to get this country moving again, restore the strength of our country, energize the people, set them free in a free enterprise system. That's what this is all about. It is about our children. It is about our families. It is about our country. And frankly, ladies and gentlemen, it's about the world, because even though they don't want to admit it, they depend on the United States of America to lead and to bring moral purpose to the globe. Ladies and gentlemen, we got to leave here and march and get to everybody to make sure that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are President and Vice President of the United States. Thank you all very much.
And that was John Kasich, governor of Ohio, the all-important swing state. And we have NPR's Jeff Brady on the floor of the convention there. I understand, Jeff, you're with some members of the Ohio delegation. Is that right?
I am, and they've been on their feet several times here. They definitely love Governor John Kasich. I'm here with Ohio State Representative Margaret Condit. She was appointed to that position 15 months ago. She's from just north of Cincinnati. Anything you heard from Governor Kasich's speech that really spoke to you? Anything that you think you'd like to hear from Governor Mitt Romney in the week ahead?
John Kasich did a great job of describing how he has turned around the state of Ohio with the help of the legislature, of course. But in the last year and a half, he described how we balanced our budget without raising taxes. We had an $8 billion budget. And we have a balanced budget amendment. We weren't supposed to be in that situation, but we were living off one-time stimulus money. That's not sustainable. All right. And he described how we now are the number one job creator in the Midwest and number four in the nation. And how we have common sense regulations now. We really do. It's called a common sense initiative. It's incredible.
over the next week. What do you want to hear from Governor Romney to help him win your state?
I want to hear his plan of how he's going to turn around the country, just like Kasich turned around Ohio, with the help of the legislature, of course, but details of it, and to restore the hope that people have. I think a lot of people are scared. And if he's elected in November, I think that a lot of people are going to sigh a breath of relief. And I think that they're going to feel more hopeful about our future.
All right. That's Ohio State Representative Margaret Condit. Thanks so much for chatting with us. Back up to you in the booth.
Okay, Jeff Brady, thanks so much. Ron Elving, that was a pretty strong speech there from Governor Kasich.
Dynamic speech we've heard thus far at the convention day. And he's kind of an excitable fellow, John Kasich, and that can really be inspiring. It can also be perhaps a little bit off-putting for some people, but he really seemed to have sincerity. He had his remarks out on a piece of paper as opposed to being read from a teleprompter, so it had a little bit of an old-fashioned quality of an old-fashioned convention stemwinder speech. And it was, I think, getting into the sort of territory we expect Chris Christie to get into a little later on when the governor of New Jersey comes out to give the keynote address.
All right, and Mara Lyson is joining us now, NPR's national political correspondent. Hi, Mara.
Hello, Jennifer.
So what do you make of the evening's discussion so far?
Well, I think they're laying out the case against the president pretty much as expected. I think the two main events, which we're waiting for, of course, is Ann Romney, who has a big job. She has to address the likability deficit that Mitt Romney comes into this convention with. She's probably his best validator, and he's reluctant and resistant to talking about the inner Mitt, kind of what's behind the stiff and awkward exterior. He says, "I am who I am." He likes to quote Popeye on that. But she's going to tell us about Romney as a son and a father and a husband and try to convince people that he understands the problems of ordinary middle-class Americans. And then there's Chris Christie, who I think is one of the most interesting events, because in all of these conventions, the battle for the next nomination begins before the current election is over. And Chris Christie is a big rock star in the party. He's a favorite of the Tea Party. He's a reform conservative governor who's widely touted as a possible candidate, and we'll see if he does himself or Romney more good tonight.
All right, and Matt Continetti, very brief few seconds we have.
You know, Kasich's speech, and Christie's will speak to this too, really struck me as a paradox. You know, they're talking about the improved conditions of their states, even as they're trying to blame Obama for the depressed condition of the country. So the Republican governors may end up saving Obama's job.
We'll have more coverage in just a few moments. This is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News.
Support for NPR's election coverage comes from America's Natural Gas Alliance, representing the natural gas industry and supporting nearly 3 million jobs across the country, ANGA.US. From the Principal Financial Group, managing investments and working to help build dreams for more than 130 years, the Principal at dreamagain.com. And from Nissan, featuring the redesigned Nissan Altima with 38 miles per gallon highway. Nissan, innovation that excites. This is NPR.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden. E.J. Dionne is joining us in Tampa there at the convention center. E.J., Matt Continente was just making the case here that Governor Kasich in Ohio was talking about how great things are in his state and how much he's been able to improve the situation. It might make Mr. Obama's case for him. And in fact, the unemployment in Ohio is just below the national average, isn't it? How are things looking in the swing state of Ohio at this point?
Well, you know, it's funny that Matt said that, because at a certain moment in the middle of Kasich's speech, I passed a note to Ron Elving here in the booth, and I said the next line is, "And that's why Barack Obama will carry Ohio." I mean, I completely agree with Matt, and it's very lucky for President Obama that most of the swing states, not all of them, Nevada has some serious economic trouble still, but most of the swing states are doing better than the national economy. And there's been a tension, actually, between the Romney campaign and some of these Republican governors, because when Romney goes to a state, his campaign message has to be the economy's a mess, things look terrible. And these Republican governors want to say, well, wait a minute, things are doing fine here. Look at all the good things I did. So I think it will be a tension throughout the rest of this campaign.
You know, it's also a bit of a tension because the Republicans usually maintain that government doesn't really have anything to do with creating jobs or making conditions better. It should just get completely out of the way. And then when a Kasich or a Scott Walker or a Chris Christie talks about his state and why it's doing better, it usually has to do with all the things they've done as governor, even if that means simply taking the government out of the equation as much as they possibly can. It is a contradiction for them, but it's one that they've addressed pretty directly in some of these speeches already in this convention day.
Well, there was a point.
By the way, the biggest surprise of the Kasich speech was his line on the black-eyed peas. And there's enormous Twitter traffic on exactly what he said. I have him saying, "I don't like the black-eyed peas." I'm not sure that's what he said.
I think he said that it's not because I don't like the black-eyed peas, which might mean it's not that I don't like the black-eyed peas. Not sure exactly how he feels about
there will
the
be
peas.
A lot of analysis about
parsing
this, I think,
of words. There was something the governor didn't talk about, which is a while ago he had signed a state law limiting collective bargaining by public employee unions, a move that had really proved popular for Scott Walker in Wisconsin, who we'll be hearing from shortly. But that measure in Ohio was actually crushed in public ballot. Matt?
Yes, it was repealed by referendum about a year after it was, or in the year that it was first enacted. That did not feature in Governor Kasich's remarks. But he did establish in his own mind and in the mind of many business people that Ohio was a friendly place for them to come in and do business, and that they were going to try to disempower the public employee unions much as they more successfully did in Wisconsin.
You know, an interesting thing about that vote, though, was that it really, Kasich was harmed by low margins among white working class voters, basically white voters without a college degree. This is, we're talking about important electoral blocks. This is perhaps the most important electoral block for Mitt Romney's potential success in winning this election on November 2nd. The voters, the white working class in Ohio, did not support Kasich's reforms in that state. Now, similar voters supported Walker's reforms, which were actually a little bit different in Wisconsin. Nonetheless, yes. Though, Mitt Romney's big problem going forward is getting those voters to turn out, and so far he hasn't been able to make a gut connection.
Yeah, right. Romney hasn't been the same in Ohio. The Republicans haven't been the same since that referendum, where a lot of the blue-collar areas that had gone Republican in 2010 switched up against the anti-union measure. And the unions and the Democrats had an advantage in Ohio because they could just put the legislation on the ballot for a referendum, whereas in Wisconsin, they had to just go all the way over to recall the governor. And I think Scott Walker survived in part because there were enough voters who may or may not have liked his collective bargaining proposal but weren't ready to vote to recall him. But I think he's since been strengthened by the fact that he won a very tough fight.
All right, we are about to hear from one swing state to another. The governor of Virginia, Bob McDonnell, is about to speak in just a moment. He was elected in November 2009 along with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. They were two Republicans elected in states that President Obama had carried. Ron Elving, what else should we know about McDonnell as we prepare to listen to him?
He
Bob McDonnell was someone who had been mentioned on many people's short lists for the vice presidency. Virginia has become a swing state, a purple state, as we now say, and many people thought he would be an attractive younger man to put on the ticket with Romney if Romney was not going to find a woman candidate to put on, or a candidate perhaps who spoke Spanish, or a candidate who at least had some claim to greater diversity. So Bob McDonnell looked like he was going to be on the very shortest of lists, but tripped up a little bit on the issue of abortion. And we can talk about that a little later on after we've heard his
speech. And here we are, Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell.
Thank you very much. Good evening, my fellow Republicans. Are you ready to elect Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan in 70 days? Imagine that. We'll have a president who actually knows how to create jobs and a vice president who actually knows what state he's in. Now, I don't have to tell any of you, this is a tough economy. We all have friends and family and neighbors who've lost their jobs and their homes. Worse, they've lost their hope. And their lost hope is why we need a big change this November. This election is about restoring the American dream. That dream led my grandfather, a poor farm boy, to leave Ireland 100 years ago and come to Ellis Island to begin his journey of freedom in America. My grandfather could have never guessed that his son would fight for this nation in World War II, that his great-granddaughter would lead a platoon in Iraq, and his grandson would grow up a middle-class kid in Fairfax County, serve in the Army, and now hold the same job as Thomas Jefferson and Patrick Henry. What an incredible country we call home here in the United States of America. This nation is powered and defined by the great idea of the American dream. That's an idea that says if you work hard, if you dream big, if you follow the rules and pursue opportunity, the sky is the limit in the United States of America. We cannot lose that dream. Now, unfortunately, many Americans are now hurting very badly. Too many Americans are looking for work because this president's policies simply haven't worked. Washington today has a surplus of rhetoric and a deficit of leadership and results. And you know the problems. Unemployment over 8% for 42 straight months. The national debt, immoral at $16 trillion and growing. New business startups at the lowest level in 30 years. And now the EPA is the Employment Prevention Agency. These times call for new leadership to get this great country out of debt and back to work. And the choice is very clear. The status quo of the entitlement society versus a dynamic change to an opportunity society. That's what we need in America. We need a president who will say to a small businesswoman, congratulations. We applaud your success. You did make that happen. You did build that in America. Big government didn't build America. You built America. Small businesses don't come out of Washington, D.C., pre-made on flatbed trucks. That coffee shop in Henrico County, that florist in Virginia Beach, that bakery in Radford, Virginia, they were all built by American entrepreneurs with big dreams, not a big spending government with a wide open wallet full of other people's money. It is remarkable in 236 years of the American experiment what the ingenious people of this magnificent nation can do when they're given the opportunity. Every American deserves the opportunity of a limited, responsible government that performs its core functions well and then gets the heck out of the way. That's when good things happen in the United States of America. Look at the results of Republican policies in the states. In states with Republican governors, the average unemployment rate is a full point lower than in states with Democratic governors. It makes a difference. Republican governors lead 7 of the 10 states with the lowest unemployment rates. And 12 of the 15 states that have been ranked best for business have Republican governors. While the Obama administration borrows now $3 billion a day just to keep the lights on, Republican governors have closed $65 billion in budget shortfalls without raising taxes. In Virginia over the last 2 years, with Republicans and Democrats working together, our unemployment rate is down 20% to 5.9%. We've added 151,000 net new jobs in Virginia. We've had nearly $1.4 billion in budget surpluses, and we've done it by keeping regulation and litigation to a minimum, and we haven't raised taxes. So, my friends, while the president talks, Republican governors lead. Talk is cheap. Results matter. Conservative fiscal policies are working, and so are more Americans in the states with Republican governors today. Now, just think what we could do if we had a president who would support us and not obstruct us. Someone who has created jobs in the private sector, who understands the economy, and who has actually balanced a budget. Heck, for that matter, somebody who's actually passed a budget. We need President Mitt Romney.
We're listening to Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell.
Because I can tell you, when Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan get together and they work with Susana Martinez or Scott Walker or John Kasich or Terry Branstad and governors from both parties across the country, we will get people back to work in this country. Our great country can no longer afford the job-destroying policies coming out of Washington, D.C. But we don't just have to hope for change. We can make the change this November. We will lift up and grow the middle class. We will celebrate job creators again. We will restore that great American dream that led my grandfather here from Ireland 100 years ago. And that all starts with electing Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan this November. Thank you very much.
And that was Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell giving a rousing speech there from the on the swing state of Virginia.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
and how good Republican leadership has been. We're joined now by Brian Naylor, who's on the convention floor. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm in the Virginia delegation with Congressman Randy Forbes of Virginia, who represents Chesapeake and the Virginia Beach area. Congressman, the governor gives a pretty good speech, doesn't he?
You know, this is a governor that's kind of the personification of the values and the beliefs of a new dynamic generation of Republicans that are coming up, and it's a governor that's actually built jobs. He's turned deficits into surpluses, so he gets to kind of walk the walk, and when he speaks, it really has an impact, and you can see it had an impact to this whole convention.
Now, Virginia is one of the primary battlegrounds in the presidential race. President Obama won 4 years ago, the first Democrat to take the state since 1964. What does Mitt Romney need to do to bring the state back into Republican hands?
I think what he's doing, I think first of all it's important that he focuses on the economy and jobs, but I still think the key to Virginia is what this administration has done to defense. Virginia is a huge state when it comes to defense. This has been an administration that's cut $800 billion out of defense in the last 2 years. They've got this $500 billion of sequestration coming forward, and so far the president has had no leadership in trying to stop it. It's going to mean 204,000 jobs lost in Virginia, and some professors have done an analysis that says it'll put us in a recession for 10 years. I think that's going to be the tipping point, and hopefully get Mitt Romney not elected from Virginia, but elected president of the United States.
Now you and your House colleagues, in all fairness, also voted for that plan that brought about
this
sequestration.
No, I did not vote for that. Thought it was wrong. President signed it into law. If I'd have been president, I wouldn't have. But even regardless of that, the House has passed a budget now which would do away with sequestration for next year. It does it without raising taxes. So far, the Senate has refused to bring anything forward, and the president has been yet to put a proposal forward to stop it. This is something you can't turn around with press conferences. You need legislation so you can get to a table and compromise or work out some kind of agreement. But you can't do it if the Senate refuses to pass anything and if the president won't put forward any legislation.
And what do you think voters in Virginia want to hear, need to hear from Mitt Romney this week?
I think there's two things that's going to be important. I think they realize that with Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, you've probably got more intellectual firepower when it comes to the economy and creating jobs than we've had on a ticket in decades. But I think one of the things that's going to be important about this convention and the next several weeks is they're going to get away from the filter of all these attacks on Mitt Romney. They're going to see Mitt Romney for who he really is. And Mitt Romney is a person with a lot of character. He's somebody that the more they see, the more they're going to like. I think that's going to lead them to elect him as the next president of the United States.
All right. Thanks very much. Congressman Randy Forbes from Virginia. Jennifer, back to you.
Thank you so much, Brian Naylor. And Ron Elving, your reaction there to the speech and anything you want to add on Governor Bob McDonnell.
I thought McDonnell did an awfully good job of getting through a lot of numbers in a compelling way. It's not easy to lay out a lot of statistics, even if you're talking to a friendly audience, and keep their attention. But the way he was talking about 7 out of 10 of the states that have the lowest unemployment were 7 out of 10 were Republican governor states. 12 out of 15 of the states rated as best for business were Republican governor states. I thought he really did a good job of bringing that across, and of course it's a theme we've been hearing about all day. And by the way, Jennifer, this has been going on since 2 o'clock. We came on the air at 8 o'clock tonight, but this convention began at 2 o'clock.
We appreciate you listening to it all there, Ron. Matt Continetti.
Ron is absolutely right about Bob McDonnell, remarkably fluid politician and one with, I think, a big future. But also, as I was watching his speech, I was struck by his youth. And that's something that we'll see again and again throughout this convention. This is a youthful Republican Party. And this is, in that sense, a very different one than past conventions in recent times.
All right. There's lots of convention news and analysis at our website. You can join in a live chat there at npr.org. You're listening to special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News.